Do I set it to channel 3 and then press record?
Doesn't matter what channel you're on. You just have to press the button.
Ah. And then you put the tape in.
The tape is already in, you moron!
Start the show! Go, go, go!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord cutting revolution so that you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, and that was Billy Crystal. You remember that scene from City Slickers when he murders Daniel Stern in cold blood?
I never saw City Slickers.
Oh, you
but
did?
I'm pretty sure that wasn't in there.
No, yeah, correct. That's a clip from Funny or Die, did a spoof that I think is more precious than funny about it's the guys from City Slickers playing the characters that they played. But they're in Westworld, and so they're being debugged. And basically, you know, Billy Crystal still is lovable, laughable, neurotic self, but then also just murdering people who disagree with him. And so they got one of the guys, I think it was Sylvester or the other one, Felix. I don't know. But they got one of the actors, and they did a good job of recreating Westworld. It wasn't like guffaw funny, but it was kind of adorable.
They got Clementine to do a cameo. That was pretty amazing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, they got the. That's right. So anyway, as a lot of Funny or Die stuff, you watch it and you nod and go, "That was funny."
Yeah.
No, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that exists. But you don't
know
laugh.
You know who I'm really glad exists is our guest.
What? Are you talking about a writer of the Doctor Strange movie, C. Robert Cargill?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Dude, thank you so much for joining us. We're bucking a trend. After years of both of us being too busy for the other, this is the fourth time you've been able to join us for one of our broadcasts, man. We're thrilled.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled as well, especially, you know, since technology works that we can just broadcast and hang out and... This is a lot of fun, and
you don't
really
have to cross the town lake to get to each other either.
I'll tell you what, man. These days
the
with traffic,
is, especially since this is done in the afternoon, I don't have to contend with Mopac during rush hour.
Yeah, dude,
exactly.
It's feeling like we're farther and farther apart.
Even
Anderson
though we haven't
Lane,
moved,
yeah.
All right, well, let's get right into things with our primary target. In an attempt not to stereotype ourselves, we will talk about the Netflix earnings later. Instead, I want to talk about Roku rolling out updates to its television software. This is not to the Roku set-top boxes. This is to the televisions that have the Roku operating system built in. Any Roku TV May 2011 or newer gets this update called More Ways to Watch. And kudos to Roku, it's opt-in. So when this update has been installed, you'll be asked if you want it, or if you turn on a brand new TV for the first time, you'll be asked if you want it. If you say yes, it will monitor what you're watching and pop up other ways to see what you're currently viewing. Handy if you want to start from the beginning of a show that you pop into the middle of, or maybe find a version without commercials. It can also suggest related shows, and it's using something called automatic content recognition to recognize what's coming in over the air or from cable. So it doesn't work if you're using Hulu or Netflix or something like that. Other updates include a favorite list for your over-the-air channels, thumbnail images for live TV, fast forward and rewind. That's handy. Closed caption support on the replay feature, a faster resume from standby, and custom input names. So if you have two Xboxes, you can name one 360 and one Xbox One. And both TV and the set-top box are getting an expanded search to 300 streaming channels. But Brian, what do you think of this new feature that says, hey, we see that you popped in the middle of Seinfeld. Here's where you can watch all of Seinfeld.
I think that...
And would it have been a different reaction if I hadn't picked Seinfeld? Okay, go.
I think that that as far as user functionality, this is so much closer to what I actually want. We are at a point where there are enough data points and the artificial intelligence is good enough that there's no reason that I should be the one in charge of deciding what the best way is for me to watch this thing based on my preferences and so on. There should be an all-knowing AI that knows all the different ways that stuff could do it and offer me up the best one based and over time stop even offering, but just instead do it because it's figured out my preferences. Having said all of that, it seems like when that feature begins to be rolled out, whoever does it needs to be very, very specific and very, very clear about what they do and do not collect and what can and cannot be sold about you and your personal viewing habits. And that is what I am not seeing from this Roku thing at all. According to the TechCrunch article, there's very little information about what they might do with the information and even what information is collected. And I think that's going to get certainly folks like my parents from a little bit worried about signing up on that kind of thing.
Actually, I mean, just to be fair to Roku, they said to TechCrunch, look at our privacy policy. And the privacy policy is fairly detailed. It says that Roku says the data will be used for personalized recommendations and personalized ads, as well as to measure the viewership of ads and programming, and will be combined with other demographic data Roku has on you. You may not like all that, but it is all listed there.
Well, we'll table the – because here's the weird part is I actually suspect that this could get us to a place where advertising is such an inherently inefficient medium. Broadcasting is such an inherently inefficient medium. You just have to shout loudly and hope that of the 100 million people watching the Super Bowl, 5,000 of them are going to sign up for life insurance so you make back your $1 million or $2 million investment or whatever. Wouldn't it be great? Like, I could picture a world where just everybody gets free TVs. And in exchange, through a process, you know, let's say a Bitcoin-like anonymous guaranteed some scheme that you feel confident that they will know in the aggregate what people are watching, but no other person can track down you personally and detail your habits. And the side effect of that is that every single advertisement you get, they don't have to lead off with a cute dog to trick you into paying attention before they talk about Doritos. They will instead know that you are in the middle of trying to choose life insurance, and they will instead bid each other to give a comparable analysis to turn that downtime into something. Like, what if every single ad was truly, truly relevant? That would be kind of rad.
But that's kind of what Roku is saying they want to do here. I'm curious if Cargill is bothered by any of this.
You know, I'm really not. And I know that I should be. But at the end of the day, we're not talking about anything super private. We're talking about what TV shows we watch. And here we are on a podcast in which we're going to sit around and publicly announce to everyone what TV shows we watch. It doesn't bother me that someone on a box can go, what does this particular consumer watch? What has he been watching? And then track down the shows that have, you know, appeared on my television. That doesn't tell them anything about my private life, except maybe what time I watch television. And is that something that I'm concerned about someone having? Do I think public citizens should be able to Google other public citizens and find this kind of stuff out? Not really, no. But there's no real way to monetize that properly that anyone would ever find acceptable. Having a computer be able to spit out that a guy that my age tends to watch these shows and tends to watch them at this time of day and tends to want to buy these types of things isn't something that can ever be actively used against me in a way that I see as feasible. So no, this stuff really doesn't bother me. I'm not concerned if Roku knows what shows that I'm watching through it.
Okay. And it's opt-in. I mean, I want to give Roku big credit for that. Most companies do this sort of thing and make you opt out if you don't want it. They're saying, we're not going to put you in this process unless you specifically say, yes, I would like to do that.
Sure. And understand, I'm not speaking to the specifics of this offering. I think on balance, it's going to be good. I think that it's a sensible rollout. But, you know, I'm engaging in a bit of futurism here because there are certain questions in, for example, psychological surveys that they ask. There's a book, A Billion Wicked Thoughts, talking about what people Google when they're looking up pornography or whatever. And the problem or socially inappropriate things to admit in public. Oftentimes they will do a survey and they'll ask like, you ever punch your wife? And you'll be like, no, I would never do that. What they figured out is they figured out that they could ask, hey, of these 10 things, count the number of them that you have ever engaged in. And so you're not saying which of these 10 things you did. You just give a number and it's an accurate number. And then they later ask another question that is a different version of it that either adds one or takes one out or whatever. And then by process of elimination, they're able to say, yeah, this guy punched his wife once. And they can do the same thing if, and again, I'm not trying to be all Alex Jones about this, but like, eventually you get to a point where you have customized ads with a skip now feature and you get 75 different iterations of the ad and it notices which one you linger on 3 seconds longer than the other. And it continues to build an increasingly precise profile about you. Now, the end result of this will be that you will get extraordinarily prescient, perfect tailored ads, which might be a wonderful thing in that they're relevant to your interests. But I would imagine that there's a segment of the populace that would be very uncomfortable with that level of what some might call Orwellian, but this is all free market stuff, so I'm fine with it. I don't know. There's just some interesting implications about where that could head eventually.
And I think one of the keys to it is you have control over it, whether you're able to know what's being collected, which is detailed in the privacy policy, and choose not to, which you can do here. Cargo, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the thing is while that's true and while we're headed towards a future where that's possible, we're also headed towards a future where we're actually filtering out and destroying the ad market. You know, we have these subscription channels where instead of having a paying for cable and having these channels piped in, we're paying for Netflix, we're paying for Hulu, we're paying for to buy our episodes on iTunes or Amazon of our shows. And so we're tailoring our own content and we're avoiding ads. We're running ad blockers. They just had a I think Princeton or MIT just ran a successful test. They've got a new AI that can completely filter ads from the internet entirely, even ads that are designed and built into the articles themselves can be filtered out.
Yeah, they scan the content. It's pretty crazy.
I think we're heading into a future where we're making it pretty hard for advertisers to even advertise, and we're changing the way we're going to be advertised too. I don't know that in 10 years, advertising in media is going to be a thing that is as anywhere near the size that it is now.
Well, and this Roku TV platform is a place to give hope to the advertisers. Maybe you don't think they deserve any hope, but this is the kind of thing that can help with that, because the people who are paying for Netflix and Hulu will see these Roku ads because they show up on the screen where you're picking your thing to watch, right? Where you're going to the app, and that's a chance to give like a trailer recommendation or something like that. And they're not easily blocked the way a web browser is.
But of course it's a service you're choosing, but it's a service that, like, the reason I would see this existing, the main reason for this to exist is Roku discovers that you're watching, you clicked around on cable and you've landed on The Running Man, and it's 20 minutes into The Running Man and it's got commercials, but hey, you've got Netflix and Netflix has The Running Man this month, so you can watch it beginning to end uncensored if you want right now. And then it's going to say, hey, you want to do that? And it's like, hell yeah, I want to do that. And you click on it and you start watching the movie properly as opposed to watching it on open air broadcast.
Right.
See, that's probably the main way that people are going to want to use this. Not, hey, I'm watching Friends right now, so I want a recommendation of 5 other shows that I might like. It's the, no, you started this 10 minutes in. Do you want to go back and watch it from the beginning?
What Roku will do is say, well, we know that they don't like Friends. They do like Running Man. And that means that they like Nike shoes. And so when they're on the choose screen of apps, Nike will pay to put an ad right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But will we go with that? Will we keep using that service? Will we opt in for a service that's going to provide us ads that we didn't ask for?
Opt back out of it. Right.
Yeah, well, I disagree with the supposition that there'll be any less advertising in media. It'll just change form. It'll be much more ad placements, you know, showing up in movies or whatever. Keep in mind also that all three of us are aging out of the target demographic. And so as a result, we also also are in a position to pay for things. Meanwhile, what these brands want to do, they are playing a very long game. They want to establish, starting with kids, 12 years old, they want to establish lifelong relationship with brands. You know, the Scion was a new sub-brand under Toyota that was introduced just to attract 17-year-olds. And as they aged into their 20s, they came up with more modern coupes under that name. And now as they're entering their 30s, they're go ahead.
Yo, true story. I own a Scion. they were trying to appeal to millennials and they failed. Millennials did not like the Scions. Gen Xers loved the Scions. Gen Xers loved feeling like they were hip and in on something that the teenagers were in on, and the teenagers didn't like the cars.
Sure.
So they ended up making the perfect Gen Xer car, which was a success and a failure, which is why Scion doesn't actually exist anymore.
But my point is that you know, they are building brands with the intention of morphing what the brand needs, because for example, Cadillac, that was a status symbol to our parents, right? And then they realized that once it reached the end of its brand shelf life, they started to make it more affordable, so more people could feel super successful with the Cadillac and so on. And these are 20 or 30 year journeys that they're setting up. So I don't think advertising is ever going to be out of the media. I think it's just going to be much more precisely controlled with integration and plot points and all of that stuff. Like
I don't know.
In movies.
I don't know, Brian. All the stuff you're saying just makes my head hurt. It sounds complicated. Let's just decide not to take ads at all on the show and just go straight to the people who watch and listen.
Tom, wait, we can't. There's no platform that would just
forget
allow us
it.
To
just
stay.
Forget advertising altogether.
Yeah, but
I think it's gonna. I think honestly, we're gonna move into much more integrated product placement. Like, as Brian is showing us right now, like, you're watching a Brian Brushwood TV show, getting a Brian Brushwood advertisement every time he is on camera.
That's right. But if you want to keep us loud, live, and independent and completely free of outside influences and ads, why don't you join the 1,729 patrons at patreon.com/cordkillers. You guys changed our lives three years ago, Tom. 3 years ago when we went independent, and we can't thank you guys enough.
Yeah, this show is not brought to you by Hoya Cream of Beans product placement.
Tom.
Because you support us at patreon.com/cordkillers.
Look, I'm just going to enjoy the crisp, clean, refreshing taste of new aspartame-free Pepsi. Mm.
And I'm certainly not drinking from a cup that comes from one of the best barbecue joints in Austin, Texas.
Not a paid placement at all. Now, on to how to watch. So this is our segment about using the services that let us watch the shows we want to watch. Netflix had their earnings report today, added 1.42 million domestic subscribers and 3.53 million international subscribers. Not only was that a little slower than last quarter, but it also missed Netflix's own and Wall Street's expectations. Both Wall Street and Netflix thought they were going to get 1.5 million domestic and 3.7 million international, so just a little bit under. And Netflix did beat expectations on a 37 cents a share with 40 cents a share of earnings, and met expectation of revenue at 2.64 million or billion. But the interesting part with Netflix is never those numbers. The interesting part is, did they get subscribers, which we just mentioned, and what else did they say crazy stuff in their shareholder letter? Netflix expects 600,000 domestic subscribers and 2.6 million international subscribers in the second quarter. That would bring them above 100 million. They say they'll hit their 100 millionth subscriber this weekend. And in the letter, Netflix argued that its members fund its films, so they should be the first to see them, but that it's open to supporting theater chains, like name-checking AMC and Regal, in showing Netflix films, like, our Will Smith movie, Bright, that's coming out this fall. It also said that its members have cumulatively spent 500 million hours watching Adam Sandler movies.
Oh, dear.
Are you talking about the $100 million David Ayers directed Max Landis written Will Smith movie
that Cargill,
that they're very, very desperate to convince theaters to show when the when they've spent $100 million?
So much so that they would just plop a paragraph in their shareholder letter without provocation, apropos of nothing.
Although I think that's a really, it's not exactly the most subtle placement or line, but I think it does speak to where they're at, where it's like they are saying, read between the lines, they're saying, our shareholder, listen, shareholders, it's our cash cow is this giant money fountain that we have built that's just going to keep on going month over month. But having said that, there is an opportunity for us to get more mainstream cachet by having theatrical releases of movies that we've created. Again, not the most subtle placement, but I think the right sentiment for them to express.
You know, it's a very interesting argument that's going on right now. I'm a little baffled that they haven't worked something out yet with the theater chains. They clearly really want it. They really have been pushing to get to a day and date so that people like me, who are me and my wife, we love getting out of the house. We love going to an Alamo Draft House and watching a movie. That's just something we like to do at least once a week. And we very much want to see Bright on the big screen. Like, every name attached to this movie is a name on its own that would pull us out to the movie theaters, but we're not going to get that choice. It's only going to be on Netflix and we're only going to be able to watch it at home.
Well, good news is that's not 100% true. There will be some theaters carrying it, but they'll be hard to find, and they won't be the big AMC and Regal theaters.
Well, right now they've got a 10 screen deal with iPick, and we have an iPick theater near our house, one of the only 10 in the country. So I'm hoping I get to go see it on the big screen. But this is the big test balloon, and I see why they're fighting so hard and making a big deal, because they've been arguing for years that both models can be supported at the same time with something like Bright, that people who want to watch it at home with their family and not go out and not have to deal with the movie theater can do that. And those of us that want to see it on a 30-foot screen in the dark with 200 gasping people all into the movie is a way that we should be able to watch it as well. But they want it to be day and date. They don't want to give a window to the theaters so that the theaters don't get screwed if they make a bad call. So it's a really interesting debate that's going on. And it's David Ehrlich actually wrote a really interesting article today about whether or not Netflix picking up all these indie darlings is killing the indie world, and because these movies can't be seen on the big screen. So it's a debate I think we're going to have all year until Bright comes out and we find out if this was a good gamble or not.
You know, I wonder if, and I understand where the movie theaters are coming from. Their whole business model for forever. The movie theaters have gone through a lot with getting crushed by television in the 1950s, right? There are still people working in the biz who grew up in that environment and know how bad they were, suddenly seedy and empty and whatever. And they're looking at that again with Netflix. But on the flip side, it's never been easier to switch. You know, they could do a Netflix movie for premiere night only, and then the very next night, go back to showing Star Wars or whatever. Like, all they want is to create events that get butts in seats. And you got to figure, even if that window is just as short as one weekend or one night or whatever, as long as they're filling all those seats, then, you know, like, let's say Get Out came out on Netflix and in movie theaters day and date, and then the immediate buzz was, do not watch Get Out at home. Get out, literally get out of your house.
Get out.
Go to the theater and watch it, because being there in that environment watching it definitely shapes the experience. And I got to feel like there's some kind of
Well, the
symbiosis.
Problem is precedent, though. That may make sense for one film from Netflix, but then once they do it for Netflix, everybody else is going to want that deal, which then limits the number of films in the theaters. They make their money off of getting butts in the seats and buying concessions. And so they don't want to do anything that will risk that foot traffic. And on the opposite side, Netflix doesn't want to do anything that risks people coming to Netflix. Look at their earnings report. They're making money. Their problem is in slower subscriber growth this quarter. And so what drives subscribers? Well, the only place you're going to be able to see Bright is by being a subscriber to Netflix. So what they're doing in the shareholder letter is saying, we're not saying no to theaters. We just want to have a deal that doesn't let us lose that advantage of having the movie on our service.
Well, there's another angle to that, though. What they're trying to do is they're trying to legitimize their content even more. And this is by putting movies in theaters. I mean, it's why Netflix hasn't done away with having, you know, theatrically released content. Like, they're moving more towards an HBO style model, but they're making all their own content. But why are they not only providing their own content? Well, the reason is they want to legitimize that content. They want movies on their service not to be Netflix movies. They want them to be movies you're watching on Netflix. And that's what they're trying to do with Bright. They're trying to legitimize it as a blockbuster that you can see on day and date at home on their service. They want you not to think of it as a cable movie, as a Netflix movie. They want you to think of it as a blockbuster movie that we exclusively have rights to stream at home.
All right.
And that's what they're trying to do with all their content. And by putting it in theaters, it adds an extra level of legitimacy that these projects don't have right now.
Try this on for size. Movie theaters make no money. They rent the movies, and then pretty much all the ticket sales go to cover the rental of the movie. They make money on popcorn and concessions. Distribution, and that made sense because when it used to be expensive to distribute film canisters that had to be assembled, set up, run a projection, and break down. Nowadays, all that is done digital. What if they started, and let's say, you know, maybe three events a year where it's like, hey, got a new $100 million movie coming out. It's going to be great. It's got Will Smith in it. We're doing a special plan. If you would like to go see it for free at the movie theater the night before it comes out on Netflix, or the night that it comes out on Netflix, place your reservation. We'll send you QR codes and you get in for free. So now the movie theaters are in the same position they've already been, but now they're running an event that they're able to sell all the popcorn at, and you're able to get your experience, Cargill, of going out and being in the big theater for the big show.
Yeah, no, that's not a terrible idea. It's really not a bad idea at all, because, I mean, it really is about concessions. Like, that's the weirdest thing that I don't understand is how Netflix hasn't worked something out with the Alamo Drafthouse, because the Alamo Drafthouse makes all of its money on food and the wine and beer and the experience. The ticket sales are not what drives it. So it's so easy to work something out with Netflix and the Draft House to be like, hey, why aren't you guys showing our movies and giving us that Draft House experience to tie into our films? I don't
because I know I've seen Netflix movies at Landmark theaters, right? A smaller chain. What did they do with Landmark that they didn't do with Alamo? I wonder. That's a really good question.
Interesting. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. We got one more thing in how to watch about Hulu's live TV service. Sources say Hulu's streaming service will cost $40 a month. That goes along with what Mike Hopkins, the CEO of Hulu, previously said, that it would be less than $40. Technically, it's going to be $39.99 then, so it'll be less. The rumor is that it would include live TV broadcasts and the Hulu you have now, the on-demand library. Supposedly, there would be a cloud DVR available with the basic package that would not support fast forward, so you couldn't fast forward through commercials, but a premium tier might have a DVR with fast forward and no limit on simultaneous streams, and that would cost you $20 a month or less. And presumably you could also pay extra to get the Hulu library commercial free. So planned for a spring launch, if these sources are correct, you could get Hulu on demand for $8, like you can now, Hulu on demand commercial free for $12, like you can now, Hulu Live, which would be this package of channels that are live, plus the old Hulu, for $40 a month. Hulu Live and on-demand commercial-free for what, $44 if you pay the extra difference between on-demand and commercial-free? Hulu Live on-demand unlimited DVR would be $60, and I guess Hulu Live on-demand unlimited DVR commercial-free, $64. Brian, have I turned you off of this by making it complicated?
No, you just left out their new slogan. Hulu, we're super simple, unless you're old. this is...
and again, sources say this is not Hulu's plan yet.
Yeah.
So we have to wait.
Right. Knowing the only reason I'm not blowing my stack right now is because this is a sources say story and I should wait and see. But I don't know that this is going to swing. I'm not in love with Hulu's environment or interface. Now, if Amazon did this, like, I'm already invested. To be honest, that's what all this boils down to. I really like the Amazon environment. I really like, I own a lot of stuff on Amazon, works on all my things. And I just, whenever I go to buy a thing, I buy it from Amazon just because it's the easiest. If Amazon offered all this and it just says, don't use your brain, click this button and we'll take care of you. And then I would click that button, but I'm not going to go invest in Hulu, even though I think my wife still
is paying. It's the DVR thing that makes it complex to me. It's like, yep. I get it. There's live and on demand, commercial free or not. Right. Why add this extra DVR complexity? Cargill, what do you make of this?
I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to differentiate themselves from the other streaming channels by becoming your cable provider. I mean, it's very much all of those options sound exactly like what you have with cable. And they're trying to lure people away from their cable boxes and say, just do it all digitally. You don't need a cable box anymore. We're your cable provider. And I think that offering, I mean, all those words, while it sounds complicated, it doesn't bring someone like me who doesn't have cable into their fold. What it does instead is it tells people like my parents, hey, everything you get from your cable company, we have here. And all you have to do is tell us what you want, and we have a price for it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to what to watch in our under surveillance segment.
Not like real estate. It's all about location.
Under surveillance.
Now, coming up in a couple of weeks, we get Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, but something we'll be able to watch in a few years will be James Gunn returning to write and direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
I you gotta feel like this is an interior show of support. I mean, you probably know a lot more about this than I do, Cargill, but this kind of announcement before it even comes out sounds to me like everybody is really happy and really bullish on how Volume 2 is going to do. And so they're locking in what they can while they can before they can.
Well, when I saw this news today, it was next to the other headline, fire is hot. this is the least shocking news of anything. I mean, first of all, interior wise, everyone at Marvel loves James Gunn. Everyone that's worked with him adores him. I mean, I'm talking like security people, people who carry cable. Everybody loves James Gunn. The movies he's making are connecting with audiences. The Volume 2, as we talked about during the summer movie draft, has tested higher than any other Marvel film has in one of their friends and family screenings. It is a movie that it is a franchise that is working and everybody's happy with. And so, he wants to make another one. And of course, they want to make another one with him because Marvel is very much a if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. So, yeah, of course, he's going to come back. And of course, they were going to announce it. And he was happy to announce it early on because he's going to go right in and start working on it as soon as this is locked. And with it's coming out. So I'm sure it's locked. He's done. And he's probably going to sit down and start writing as soon as possible to move on to the next one.
Yep.
This weekend, did y'all happen to see that there was a Star Wars teaser trailer out?
What?
Did you catch that?
Something Star Wars happened this weekend? That's so weird. How did I not hear about this everywhere on the internet?
I am really looking forward to being surprised, but I am growing cautiously nervous that none of the things I wanted to get out of the Disney deal are happening. The first movie I really forgave because it made a statement. It said, we need to remind people what they love about Star Wars. We need to tell people that the prequels are going away and they're ushered in the past. So yes, we're just going to remake the first movie and all that stuff. Then Rogue One happened and the promise seemed to be that Rogue One was going to be, we're going to get brand new stories. It's a wide expanded universe. There's so many tales to tell, so many people to fall in love with. And instead, we got a prequel that was all unnecessary connective tissue between two places that only made the whole world seem even smaller still. Now we have, and I know we were talking about this in the pre-show, that side by side, the new trailer and the old trailer, this was a manipulated footage in order to massage it to be exactly on the same beats. But all of Star Wars is starting to feel an awful lot like paint by numbers. And I'm starting to wonder if there is any more stories to tell, because I know there's plenty to tell in the Marvel universe. I've seen heist movies. I've seen, you know, superheroes attacking blue clouds in the sky. You know, we've seen comedies and all this stuff. All I'm seeing is a dissection of a phenomenon that I loved when I was five, you know?
Cargill, how did you feel about the teaser?
I would agree. I mostly agree with everything Brian says, except I have two words to add. Ryan freaking Johnson.
Yes. Okay. And I am very optimistic in that regard.
If it were not for Ryan's involvement, I would not be interested in this movie. Like, because seriously, I feel the same way. I feel like, you know, Force Awakens was too much of a retread with some really disappointing elements to it. And Rogue One was a movie that, you know, was filled with great potential characters, but no actual characters. And I was left disappointed. But Ryan is brilliant. And he wrote the script. He directed it. He's made three brilliant films so far. I know for a fact he is a hardcore fan. I think he's going to push the limits. And I think what's going to happen is he's going to show the model that of what can be. And then, of course, that's being followed up with Lord and Miller, who are giving us the Han Solo movie, which ordinarily I wouldn't be interested in, except for the cast that they got and the fact that it's Lord and Miller.
Yeah.
And those guys are so brilliant and talented as well. So I think what we've had is we've had some stumbling at first as they try to find their footing, and we're going to have some geniuses show us how it's done, and then everybody's going to be copying that and trying to push the boundaries of what they can do from that point on.
Yeah, I guess this next movie will really, really be evidence of that way, but it's like, I'm so done with Han Solo and characters we know. I'm so done with everyone we've already seen.
Hold on. I need to get my side in here. We've got the dark side, we got the gray side. I am excited about this. I didn't think The Force Awakens was just a remake of A New Hope. I actually rewatched it again this week and found all kinds of things that I'd forgotten about that I enjoyed. I'm very interested in the story of Rey and Finn and where they're going with it. This teaser looked great to me and got me super excited about it. I will totally agree with you guys on Rogue One that they just didn't create characters. They didn't create the right characters, and I didn't care about them. And that's the biggest problem. But I think if they had, it wasn't a connection to the from one thing to another necessarily. It could have been really fun to lead right up to The New Hope. Hopefully with Han Solo, they don't make that mistake. But I'm a Philistine. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm probably pulling the wool over my own eyes and just being a fanboy and accepting whatever they spoon down my throat. I will admit to all of that, but I'm super excited about this.
And you know what the thing is I'm excited, but I'm not excited because of what came before. I'm excited for the potential that this has, because I agree with Brian. This is, there is a lot of potential in the Star Wars universe, and I feel that it's untapped. I feel like these previous two movies spent so much time trying to go back to the well, but now we have people that have proven they, like Lord Miller, have proven that they know how to go back to the well and make it awesome. With 21 Jump Street, they took a tired, old, dead franchise and breathed new life into it and made great comedy out of it. What kind of comedy are we going to get out of Han and Lando? I cannot wait to see that. So I think so too.
I guess my core objection is just this strange fascination that every single property has had about filling in the cracks rather than building a new structure. Like, I don't care what happened between these two movies. You don't have to make a whole nother movie to tell me about the peripheral story of you know, I don't like any of that. And if I just want new and fine, have a cameo, have a surprise bit or whatever, but don't say finally the story of how the plans got there was finally told.
So, but you like Star Wars Rebels, right?
I do. But I don't like the fact that I think I would like it more if it wasn't connective tissue. I would like it more if it wasn't like, and who's the leader of the room? Oh.
Well, and so that's a taste thing, right? I love the connective tissue. I dig into that. I think it's great. And sometimes it's done better than others. But
sure,
when it's done really well, I adore it.
And this is the problem.
Go ahead, Cargill.
This is exactly the problem with Hollywood. I'm flanked on both sides by both opinions. And Hollywood's trying to figure out, it can only put out one Star Wars movie in a a given year without cannibalizing itself. So what is that story going to be? Is it going to be something that gives fan service? That gives fan service, or is it something that is going to be new and different but the same?
Yep.
And so this is a very, very hard line to walk, and all the studios are wrestling with this, because how do you get people out of their seat, off their couches, out to a movie theater to pay for a big budget movie? What do they want in that movie? So that is a really, really hard question, and they're trying to walk that line. And it is very, very hard. It's so weird to watch the audiences for the same stuff that sit next, that go together to see the movies. I'm sure you guys would go see Star Wars together if you could.
Sure. Oh yeah, totally. And when they win is when they have Brian and I both applauding at the end.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure there's, and none of this is to say I'm cynical or I certainly don't want it to fail. It's just that, you know, I cheerled through two movies that didn't give me what I want. And I'm really ready for this. Please don't be a third swing and a miss, you know?
Well, let's shift gears to Star Wars Rebels Season 4, which they have decided to make its last. They're just not going to come back after Season 4 because Dave Filoni said, I want to end this story. I don't want to string it on.
I think that is wonderful and shows real artistic merit and is the right decision to make.
And Star Wars Forces of Destiny is a series of 3-minute animated shorts that's coming to YouTube. So another interesting move to say we're going to do 2D animation and we're going to put it online exclusively and try to sell a lot of toys around it, obviously. But it includes episodes with Rey, Sabine, Ahsoka, and Leia, and some other characters to be announced soon.
Lost all interest.
As you can tell, you know what people love? Ewoks. Got to be big money on this one. Everybody loves Ewoks.
Mm-mm-mm. I don't think they mentioned anything about Ewoks.
That's right there in the image we showed.
There's an Ewok
with
Leia?
Ewoks.
Nice.
Yeah.
There we go. And then shifting away from Star Wars for just a quick bit, Fargo returns to FX on Wednesday for Season 3, if you're keeping an eye out for that. And Silicon Valley returns to HBO for Season 4 on Sunday. Let's talk about what we're watching. Cargill, starting with you, what's been filling your eyeballs lately?
Well, MST3K came out this weekend. I am a longtime old school fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. I was very excited that they were doing a season on Netflix. And then I started watching it and became super excited that they were showing it on Netflix. The taking of this classic kind of 90s nostalgia brand and updating it with a bunch of the people that are part of the current landscape, and then hiring the writers that they've hired to work on these episodes has created something that does everything it did back in the 90s, but knows its audience so well that it's playing to the audience perfectly. And I'm halfway through the season, and I am madly in love with it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I watched through the first break of the first episode, and to be honest, I think part of the reasons had nothing to do with enjoying it, but one of the things I was impatient for was to just get back to Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt and Jonah and just tell them, you know, I wanted to see more of them. I was less interested in the shtick of the movie, although I was laughing along with a bunch of their comments of the movie.
Yeah, I you know, it's weird because the strength of the show was always in the riffing and you know, the laugh out loud moments on the B movies, and I did not get far enough into the movie to really judge it appropriately on that. I'll be really interested as we continue to watch forward to get a feel for there's some stuff that this is a group of people who clearly love the source material and are clearly adhering to certain elements of the source material out of homage. But the source material had those things. For example, the wacky inventions that Joel Hodgson did. You know, that was his stand-up act. That was his core competency and his strength. And that was a way for him to wedge his genuine talents into the show. But when they did it on this, it was just sort of like, oh, I'm reading the manual. It says I have to show you an invention. And so they showed an invention that, I'm sure is fine. But I really look forward to seeing opportunities for each of these characters to really come into their own and bring what their outside influences have to offer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but keep in mind, Joel Hodgson is he's the head writer and the director of almost all the episodes, if not all of them. So I guarantee you these are his inventions as well. And the invention exchange does get better. It's just like the old show. Some of them were very hit or miss, like, here's the best idea we could come up with this week. And then you get to episodes here where, like, they have the disco cannon, and it's f-ing great. It's just wonderful. So it really does hit all those notes. Like, Jonah Ray is also one of the writers on the show. It works just like the old show did. It's just a different host. One of the other interesting things is, as the show goes along, all of the old guard show up for different gags.
Nice.
You see the return of a bunch of old characters. Joel Hodgson shows up in acting in one of the bits. So there's a lot of nods to the old stuff. Everyone else is involved, but it is still the same old model. Like, it is, here's everything you loved, and it's the same people doing it. It just happens to be a different team in front of the camera this time.
Yeah.
Anything else you've been watching you want to mention?
Yeah, I just cranked through Dirk Gently's this weekend.
I hear great things about it. A lot of people are asking us to watch that. That's another Max Landis vehicle, right?
It is. Max Landis created and wrote it. He wrote most of the episodes. It stars Elijah Wood and has a great cast, including, like, the West Wing's Richard Schiff. A lot of great character actors in that show. The show is brilliantly written. It's hilarious. It's adapted from the Douglas Adams books, which weren't that great. As a Douglas Adams fan, I remember when they came out, and we were kind of disappointed that it wasn't as good as the Hitchhiker series. What Max has done with it is he's taken it. He has made one of the hippest, most fun series that has come out. It is tied with my favorite new series of 2016 with Stranger Things, and I feel no shame in comparing it.
Wow.
It is that kind of good. It is everything you want out of that kind of show. It is bizarre. It is well-structured. It is fun, and it's got great characters. You give a rat's ass about everybody, and I don't think there's a bad episode in any of the eight. It is a perfectly constructed series. I think it's a masterpiece of a first season.
Awesome.
And it's not done running yet, right? They're bringing back more seasons.
Doing season two. But yeah, it's a perfect eight. It's essentially a mystery in eight episodes. It's a BBC series. They're doing season two, and they better, because the series ends with a, hey, that mystery is resolved. Here's a hint of what's going to happen. And then you're like, I need this season now. So you guys have to watch it.
Awesome. Dude, we got a jam-packed spoiler in time, right?
Yeah, we got Better Call Saul, Justified, The Expanse, and The Leftovers all to talk about on Spoiler in Time. I've been continuing to watch The Magicians, catching up on The Americans, and the one thing I want to mention is the season premiere of Doctor Who, which I had very low expectations for. I really like Peter Capaldi. I have not liked a lot of the stories of the past couple seasons, and this first episode came in strong. The Doctor is not just morose and brooding and torn up and weird anymore. He's solid, and he's back to being a strong character. Bill, the new companion, was adorable and way more of a callback to Rose, someone who doesn't have to try to, you know, compete with the Doctor, but just wants to have fun alongside. And it was a really good story. It wasn't the best story, but it was better than the lot that they've had. So positive response from me on Doctor Who. Brian, what about you? Anything of note you've been watching?
I've been playing a little more Hearthstone, and I found I like having just stuff on, and of everything that I just have on, Red Letter Media keeps delivering the goods. I'm starting to go through their back catalog. I think I mentioned it last week. They did an amazing April Fool's joke. Watch all of their stuff. They're great.
All right, Bryce, what have you been on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a letter from Kevin. Kevin sent along a quickie twofer of these recommendations. He writes, hey, gang, I wanted to recommend a documentary that I saw on Netflix recently, because if you're anywhere near my age, 50 plus, you'll remember this time period, what happened, and its impact on all of us in the tech world very well. It's called Silicon Cowboys. There's also the AMC show loosely based on this time period called Halt and Catch Fire, which he also recommends. The first three seasons are on Netflix. Take care, Kevin, from the Turning Into Sci-Fi TV podcast. Yeah, I really dig Halt and Catch Fire. They just got season three, so I still have yet to get into this. And if Silicon Cowboys is a documentary on the actual time period, I'm looking into it. Have any of you guys seen either of these things, Halt and Catch Fire?
I did watch the first couple episodes of Halt and Catch Fire, and it's on my, you know, want to get around to watching it type thing. But this documentary, I think much like the OJ thing we discussed before, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to be much more interested in the documentary than the fictionalized environment.
Halt and Catch Fire does have a good amount of drama. I mean, it's fictionalized, right? It's not necessarily the actual story, but I think Halt, I haven't seen the fictionalized OJ story either, so I can't really compare. But I think Halt and Catch Fire also has legs.
If you got something we should be on the lookout for, be sure to email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Real quickly, before we get to the front lines, Brian, what's been going on with your store?
Not a damn thing. Instead, all our energy is going into getting people to go to youtube.com/modernrogue, where you can learn to be the ultimate warrior, gentleman, and scoundrel. In this case, we learned how to block a haymaker punch and initiate a takedown from a dude, like former airborne ranger and Brazilian jiu-jitsu badass coach, who is fun and funny and one of the biggest geeks I know. In fact, I just got a text from Jason saying when we're going to go have coffee with him. We did a whole series of these, and it's great. Like, me and Jason are actually fighting, and it's awesome.
Go watch them fight and subscribe, youtube.com/modernrogue. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
So NBC announced an agreement with its affiliate station board. That's the board that handles relations between the NBC network and all of the television affiliates that aren't owned by NBC but carry NBC program. This agreement would allow affiliates who are not owned by NBC to opt in to any internet TV agreements that NBC negotiates on behalf of its owned and operated stations. So let's say NBC takes its 11 stations and says, hey, PlayStation, we want to make a deal. Any of the 200 affiliates that aren't owned by NBC could say, yeah, just include us on that deal. This would make it easier for local stations to get in on these internet TV services. If you're living in a place where you're like, yeah, I don't get local channels on Sling or PlayStation View or any of these services, this might help with that.
Interesting. Is this the kind of renegotiation that can lead us to kind of an end of the broadcast era of television, where it's because I don't see broadcast television being part of the landscape.
No,
I know. 50 years
from now. I don't think this has much to do with that.
Okay. Well, you don't want to have that discussion. Fine. Meanwhile, Sling's TV cloud DVR feature is available for users on Android and Roku to buy for $5 a month. Subscribers get 50 hours of video storage and channels that allow for it.
Yeah, so pay extra. Again, more complexity. Woohoo. Cord Cutter News spotted that CBS has begun to add movies to the CBS All Access app. CBS says it has about 18 movies right now, including some of the original Star Trek films. Up in the Air is on there. Funny Face is on there. They're all licensed from Paramount. CBS plans to keep adding movies to the service. My guess is they'll move on from Paramount to other studios to try to sign them up.
Cool. And Boomerang streaming service is now available for $5 a month. Another $5 a month offering, Tom.
Woo.
Offering more than 5,000 cartoons. The selection includes Looney Tunes, Scooby-Doo, Bugs Bunny, Tom and Jerry, and more. You could pay for a year at the time at $40, which ends up being $3.33 a month. Boomerang is available for U.S. customers on desktop, Android, and iOS. Support for streaming devices like Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Roku, and Chromecast are upcoming. I got to tell you, if you have a 2 to 5 year old and you want to casually catch them watching Scooby-Doo and whatnot, then I know that when we had cable, it was all Boomerang all the time.
Yeah, and they're not on cable anymore. This is the only way to get them now.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is kind of a big move. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the dispatches from the front. Tom K. writes, in episode 165 of Spoiler in Time, Brian had a hard time accepting that the OJ documentary should be considered a miniseries and not a movie. His defense was, if it was a TV series, it should be broken up into a half-hour or one-hour show. But then Brian turns around and fully accepts that BBC's Sherlock is totally a TV show, even though they are long format. I don't understand this inconsistency. Awesome show. I've listened to you guys ever since you guys were on Twit. Keep up the awesome work. I only listen to you guys and not Twit anymore. Well, you should go listen to them too, but...
I swear if I could,
explain,
Tom.
Explain yourself, Brian.
If I could, I would punch the English language right in its face. If I ever run into it, you know what? All of verbal communication, I'm just going to punch. I'm going to go make out with telepathy from now on because somewhere my intent got lost. I was and am against clubs that become cliquish and give themselves awards in general. If you're going to have an award show, it should be fair and it should be inclusive. I hate the fact that because the OJ documentary was a very long movie, and it very much was a movie. It was a movie from beginning to end with one story. Yes, it was very long. I hate that the result of its winning is that this cliquish group of people who give themselves awards changed their rules so that nobody could do that again. Then that's the extent of what I feel about it.
Brian's opinion does not rest on the length of any given episode.
Or worse yet, the semantics. I hate semantics. Well, Brian said this is a movie, but he didn't say this is a movie. No, it's not. That's not the intent. You missed it.
Cargill, do you have any opinion on this at all?
No. I mean, in terms of what happened with OJ, like, I get it, but those... things fall through the cracks. It's an new experimental type of television that technically that was a mini series, but it was also kind of a maxi series on its own. Like, it was this weird thing that that typically a mini series is, hey, it's in two or three episodes over one night. And it's like, no, this is one season. It's only ever going to be one season. And it changed how television was thought about and developed. I know that I've been in several meetings where people are like, hey, we're thinking about taking this and doing this as a single season television show. It has redefined how we do it, and we don't have a name for it yet. So until we've actually really kind of encapsulated something that captures it, this stuff's going to happen.
Well, left out of the discussion is the fact that, you know, apparently by people who, if anything, would be predisposed to not want to give it an award because it's mostly, it seems more appropriate for television over movies, a documentary film. Those people who should be the most eager to not give the award objectively decided it was the best documentary of the year. So to me, I don't care if it's 3 minutes long or 3 days long, if it is the best documentary of the year, it deserves the award, and I don't like changing the rules for that.
Also, keep in mind, though, that awards, you know, oftentimes in the discussion, awards get talked about as prestige or as an ego thing or patting each other on the back. Awards are really, the awards for the industry are really just an advertisement. You know, the Oscars, the Emmys, it really is just trying to connect with an audience and say, hey, you guys say you want the best stuff around. Here's what we think is the best stuff. And it's not necessarily the stuff that had the advertising budget to get in front of your eyes. And so stuff like this, like getting awards and people fighting for it and lobbying for it, is really just about people trying to get other people to watch good stuff. Yeah. And so it's getting too bent out of shape over it kind of defeats the purpose. Like, the thing is the OJ thing was really good and people should see it. And that's all that the award was about.
Agreed. Tim Mathis writes in saying he just finished listening to episode 165, where we were talking about the thumbs up, thumbs down star rating system for Netflix. He says he's an Uber driver, and every time he finishes a ride, Uber forces him to rate the customer. What do you think about a version similar for streaming services? I will point out that it's a little bit different because you're being paid by Uber, so they could say part of your job is you have to give a rating on customers, whereas I don't think as a customer I'm forced to thumbs up or thumbs down or give some number
of
stars.
Give me a discount, Netflix, and I'll be forced to rate everything.
You know what?
Yeah.
Actually, go ahead. Get $1 off. Commit to every movie. You have to give a thumbs up, thumbs down rating. I think that's a great idea.
Mark wrote in and said, is it possible to listen to either of your shows on Google Home or Amazon Echo? If it is possible, please tell me how. This is my main way of listening to podcasts now, but the selection of podcasts on each service is very limited.
That's a good question, and I'll bet somebody out there knows. Write us at cordkillers@gmail.com.
I have no idea how we're on the Google Play podcast store, I believe. And
yeah, and we're available through TuneIn Radio, through Alpha Geek Radio on Amazon Echo. So yes, we are there. We don't have time to give tech support on how to find us.
Yeah, no, directly, we're on the internet. If you find the internet and just start asking around, and they'll guide you over. Meanwhile, Adam Harris writes, rude, blah, blah, blah. He says, I just had an interesting call with Spectrum, formerly Time Warner Cable. At the moment, I have a 50 megabits internet from Earthlink, which is owned by Time Warner, now Spectrum. I was shopping at a local mall, saw a booth advertising the offer for Spectrum 100 megabits internet for $44.95 a month. I called to see if I could get the offer and was told that that was a promotional price for new users, and the regular rate was around $65 a month. Cue eye roll. As I was was talking to the sales rep. She was giving me the standard line about their triple play package, which has 100 megabits internet, home phone, and cable TV for $29.99 a month each. And then I told her I only wanted internet. She said that within 30 days of signing up, I could call and, quote, make changes to the account if I wanted the promotional rate, and it would still apply. I asked if that really meant I could call and cancel cable TV and phone and keep the promotional rate of $22.99 a month for the first 100 megabit internet for 12 months. She said, yes, fingers crossed that they follow through. I will be canceling ASAP. Hey, spoiler alert, Ruben, it was Ruben apparently. Because I pressed down twice. Ruben, spoiler alert, sales reps will say literally anything to get you to sign up, and they're all wrong, and nobody knows what's going on. I still have to go and fix my AT&T account because I never should have let them talk me into unlimited. That was a bad plan.
And Adam has a new 4K TV, a nice 4K TV from LG, the 55-inch OLED C7. Said, with the latest season of Better Call Saul out, where can I get it in 4K? Netflix has old seasons. I'll pay. I bought the last two on iTunes, but I cannot find a 4K digital version. Amazon offers some 4K streaming, but Better Call Saul Season 3 only is in HD. AMC site doesn't say if the stream is 4K. As far as I can tell, Better Call Saul is only 4K on the international version of Netflix, where it is being aired outside of the U.S. In the U.S., it's on AMC, and it's only HD.
Man, I'm going to say that's a bummer, but I'm going to say this is a very narrow artifact of the
early
of the
adopter rollout. Yeah. Cargill, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Tell folks where they can find more about what you got going on and follow you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
Well, if you liked listening to me, I do a weekly podcast called Junk Food Cinema. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. It's me and my buddy Brian Salisbury. We do a different film every week, and we break down why we love it and why you should watch it. This week, we're talking Lethal Weapon because we kicked off our summer of 87. We're celebrating the 30th anniversary of one of the craziest, biggest summers in blockbuster history. And every week, we're doing a different movie from 1987. You can also find me on Twitter at Massaworm. That's MASSAWYRM. Or on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
Fantastic, man.
Our website is CourtKillers.com. Our email address is CourtKillers@gmail.com. We're live on DiamondClub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. See you next time.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Court Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/courtkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.